Some closure for the victims of foreclosure.
Big banks will pay billions.
From APM, American Public Media, I'm Jeremy Hobson in Los Angeles.
And I'm David Brancaccio in New York. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, February 9th.
Coming up, we'll talk with Maryland's Attorney General about this morning's foreclosure settlement.
And a conversation with the mayor of Los Angeles.
Also, the joke of the year.
You got to hear that. And those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
We'll start this morning with the announcement aimed at bringing closure to the victims of foreclosure. Nearly all the states and the federal government have reportedly reached a $26 billion settlement with five of the nation's largest banks over abusive foreclosure practices. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
4 million households have been through foreclosure since 2007. For some of them, this is good news. Anthony Sanders teaches real estate finance at George Mason University.
They're going to receive a check. It looks like it's going to be between $1,500 and $2,000 per person.
Those homeowners weren't able to pay their mortgages. This money will compensate them for the bank's sloppiness during the foreclosure process. But Sanders wonders how much of a difference $1,500 will really make to a family that's lost its home.
If you're a major league pitcher that's won 21 games and you lose your arm in an off-season boating accident and you get a check for $1,500 from the insurance company, I sincerely doubt that's going to make you feel any better.
The settlement will also help others, homeowners who are underwater, whose houses are worth less than what they owe. There hasn't been a settlement this big between the government and industry since the tobacco settlement in 1998. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Now to one of the states that has signed on to the deal, Maryland. The attorney general there is Douglas Gansler. He joins us. Mr. Gansler, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, how's it going to work? People who are out of their houses already could get some money, like a check in the mail?
There's actually four different pools of money. One pool of money will go to each of the states to be administered by the attorney general of that state to be used for housing-related projects. Most states will be using that to beef up the number of housing counselors available to folks. Another pool of money will go to people who get a one-time check, approximately $1,800 to $2,000, who have been foreclosed upon, are no longer in their homes.
And there are two other chunks of money that will be coming in.
And the two other chunks of money are write-downs from the bank. One goes to a group of people who are not delinquent on their payments, but they have a huge negative equity in their homes. The biggest pool will go to folks who are on the brink of foreclosure. They're about to go into foreclosure. They're delinquent on their payments for principal reduction so that these people are more likely to be able to stay in their homes.
Mr. Gansler, remind us, though, what did the banks do wrong here so they have to pay this much money?
Well, in October of 2010, you'll recall, it came to light that they were actually robo-signing documents to throw people out of their homes. Machines were throwing people out of their homes, not people. They weren't even looking at the particular circumstances of homeowners before they were throwing them out. One of the other things that people are very aware of is the targeting for subprime loans of minorities and other folks who clearly were going to be unable to make their loans. But what the banks did was they made these loans anyway. They then, and this is where we'll go down the road on the securitization, they then packaged these loans together knowing full well that they were inadequate and they were based on subprime loans and then sold them to institutional investors. So that will be what's going to happen next. That was the hang-up, much why it took 14 months to reach the settlement.
So you're not done suing. This is only part of it.
This is really a literal and figurative down payment on what the havoc that was wreaked upon our economy in general and specific people who were foreclosed upon. So it's an incredibly attractive settlement for the Attorney General, who frankly only have a thin slice of jurisdiction over the national banks anyway.
Maryland Attorney General Douglas Gansler, thank you very much for this.
Thank you.
Let's get some reaction now from Katie Porter. She's a consumer law professor at the University of California, Irvine, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Katie, what does this mean for the housing market?
Overall, for the housing market, not a whole lot. The numbers sound big, but they're dwarfed by the size of the housing problem. We've heard that about 1 million homeowners may be helped by the settlement. That's probably a best-case estimate. But there are 14 million homeowners in trouble, in foreclosure, behind on their payments, where they owe more than they're worth. So some of it's not an adrenaline shot for the housing market. I'd compare it more to a vaccine that's only going to help a small group of people.
Only going to help a small group of people. So what's the importance of this settlement in your view?
I think it matters for the banks, being able to put the investigation and the uncertainty of the liability from the attorney generals behind them, although there are still some abilities for some parties to sue them, and that's an important concern that will be ongoing. For the homeowners, I think the impact of the settlement is going to turn on whether or not the government programs, the government, we are, has really figured out how to reach out to them and how to process relief. So over and over again, we've seen government's here to help, the programs are going to work, and they always keep underserving families. The other thing is we're saying 3 years here for the settlement to be fully effective.
Right.
That's a long time for families in trouble to have to wait.
Katie Porter, consumer law professor at UC Irvine, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And what about the mood of Americans regarding our housing predicament going into this apparent settlement? It's the subject of our weekly attitude check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest
margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Frank Newport is editor-in-chief at the polling firm Gallup. He joins us every Thursday. Good morning, Frank.
Hi, good morning.
So, big story today involves settlement between banks and states, real estate. What do we know going into a settlement like this about how Americans are feeling about the housing market right now?
Well, we do know that homeowners are very worried about the value of their house. We gave Americans a whole matrix of things they could worry about. And at the top of the list is the general economy and not having enough money for retirement. But right below that, homeowners are more worried about the value of their house than anything else. And that would include getting laid off, not having enough money to pay for health care and so forth. So we think homeowners, which, by the way, 66% of Americans in our latest survey say they own, don't rent. Those people are very worried about the value of their house.
Which makes a lot of sense. I saw data from some other source that talked about 1 in 5 homeowners in these United States owed more on their mortgage than their house was worth. They were underwater. I mean, that's extraordinary. You walk through a room of 10 people, 2 people would be in that position.
Indeed, and that's one of the reasons that we find Americans very worried. That 2/3 of Americans who own a house, very, very worried about the value of their house going forward.
Now, this settlement in the news today between banks and state attorneys general, but going into this story today, did Americans think, for instance, the government needs to do more to fix this housing mess?
They did, and that's a very fascinating issue because we know in a general Americans are fairly negative about the government getting involved conceptually in a lot of things. There's too much big government and so forth. However, we did ask Americans, we actually reminded them that there will be more, a rising tide of foreclosures this coming year, and then we said, should the government get involved or let the free market work its will. 58-34, 58% of Americans said, yes, the government should get involved. And just about a third, that 34%, said, oh, no, let the free market work its will. So I think the average American out there, particularly Democrats and independents, are going to be positive about the idea that the government is helping shepherd this agreement with the banks to do something about foreclosures.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
News this morning from Greece that lawmakers have agreed on a package of cuts in order to get a new round of bailout funding from the Europeans. As always, when it comes to the euro crisis, there is a next step. In this case, that's a meeting today of European finance ministers who have to approve that bailout.
Well, now to a new report about a looming problem that bankruptcy lawyers say could end up being as big as the mortgage crisis in this country. The $1 trillion student loan debt bomb. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
You've probably heard that student loans surpassed credit card debt for the first time not long ago. But unlike credit card debt, it's next to impossible to escape student debt by filing for bankruptcy. William Brewer is president of the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys.
Those student loans literally becomes a ball and chain that the person drags to their grave.
His group wants to change that, and as bankruptcy attorneys, they'd get more business. But consumer advocates agree. Mark Kantrowitz edits the financial aid website FinAid.org. He says the federal government offers borrowers other forms of relief, like income-based repayment plans and deferment. Private lenders don't.
There are many options for financial relief for the federal loans that are lacking with the private student loans.
Some lawmakers have been pushing a bill that would make it easier to discharge private student debt. With a divided Congress, Kantrowitz says it's unlikely to pass anytime soon. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Make no mistake, while there have been some heartening trends in America's jobs picture, the economy is still slow enough that all too many young people can't find jobs, or at least good enough jobs, to get on with life. That's the conclusion of a survey out this morning from the Pew Research Center. Economy-induced delays in getting on with life means fewer weddings, fewer diapers, and fewer furniture kits from IKEA. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Call it the economy's failure to launch syndrome. If you're 18 to 34, your wages have probably fallen. And there's lots of competition for entry-level positions from more experienced workers. So record numbers are staying in school or taking dead-end jobs that aren't on a career path, says Pew researcher Kim Parker.
A quarter moved back in with their parents after living on their own. There were 3 in 10 young people who said they had either postponed having a baby or postponed getting married.
But the young remain just as upbeat as ever. Fewer than 1 in 10 think they'll struggle financially in the future. Older people are way more pessimistic, though they've done better in the recession. I met John Quintanilla at his church in Rialto, California. He's 18 and looking for work.
I know eventually like everything's going to fall into place. Maybe get in a house like when I'm really old, not super old, kind of like 30s, 40s.
The inveterate optimism of youth. You got to love it. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Back to the numbers on this settlement with banks over bad foreclosures. $26 million is quite a figure, but it may not seem so big when you break it down. Under this plan, about 1 million people will owe less on their mortgage. Beyond that, 750,000 people who already lost their house will eventually get a check for about $2,000. So I poked around and found that the cash would cover moving expenses, kinda, sorta. $2,000 might just pay for the cost of moving a tiny condo across my town in the east. Moving a 3-bedroom house from, say, New Jersey to Wichita costs about 4 times the bank settlement money.
Now to the home of Marketplace, Los Angeles. It's a city with about 4 million people, about 13 million in the metro area. I know, David, it is no New York. It is not quite that big, but it is still home to the third biggest metropolitan economy in the world. L.A.'s Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa happens to be the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors at the moment. And for today's Midday Extra, he joins us now in our L.A. studio. Good morning.
Jeremy, it's great to be with you.
It's great to have you here. I want to start by asking you, I remember back in 2005 when you were inaugurated, I remember listening to your speech. And one of the things that you talked about was that the biggest challenge for Los Angeles was the fact that we spend so much time stuck in traffic. You talked about a subway to the sea. Why hasn't that happened yet?
Remember when we were talking about doubling the size of our rail system, we didn't have the money to do it. That was 2005. Well, since then, with a 2/3 vote, we passed Measure R, a half-penny sales tax, to generate $40 billion for transportation in Los Angeles, and particularly to double the size of the rail system. And Measure R actually helps to fund a subway that will take us very close to the sea.
Do you see Los Angeles in the future as a city with a transportation system like New York or Chicago or Washington, D.C., where you really can get anywhere you want to go quickly on a train or a bus?
It will be unique to Los Angeles. It won't be New York, Chicago, or San Francisco. But yes, doubling the size of the rail system will get you all over this county. And that's what we're trying to do here. You know, there was a lot of attention on LA during so-called Carmageddon. I think they saw that this administration and our transportation agency are focused on moving people, can handle the big projects. That's why we're moving ahead with our public transportation system. We don't want a Carmageddon. That HOV lane that we will build will relieve the most congested freeway in the United States.
The 405.
But we can't continue building freeways in L.A. We've got to invest in public transportation. And that's what I said we'd do 6 years ago in my inaugural speech, as you mentioned.
All right. Well, in addition to being the mayor of Los Angeles, you are also, as we said, the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. What is a city that you have seen since you've been in that job that has inspired you, that you see as a model for things that other cities in the country should emulate?
Well, there are a lot of great cities. Chicago's one of them. I'm a big fan of Chicago. I think New York is a very well-run city. So is Boston. There are a number of great cities and great mayors. L.A. is unique. I like to say L.A. doesn't care who your father was. In my case, they don't care that I didn't have one. And with the new federal court decision, they don't care if you have two of them. It's a city that says, just do it. We have a quality of life here that I think is unique, better than any around the country. And it's a city with a gateway to Asia and Latin America. And that's why I believe that we're the Venice of the 21st century and that we are America's city of the future because of the proximity that we have to the growing economies of Asia and Latin America.
What do you see as the biggest economic challenge for Los Angeles going forward?
I think the biggest economic challenge that we're facing is the challenge of improving our public schools. We can't continue to drop out as many kids as we do, to not send enough of them to universities and train them in math and science and engineering if we want to compete in the world. And that's not just true of us. It's true of other major cities around the country. We are all challenged with improving our schools, with making them places of excellence, with training our kids to be college ready or career ready when they graduate from high school and go on.
How are LA's finances? Is the situation better now than it was, say, a year ago?
Without question. The situation is definitely better. We were facing a $500 million structural deficit this year. It's about $200. We'll have to cut that even further. These are big challenges given that the economy is growing, but not growing as fast as we would like. The difference between cities and the state and the federal government is that the federal government, when they have a deficit, can print more money.
Yep.
States balance their budget on the backs of cities, counties, and school districts. The buck stops with us, and we have to make the tough decisions, and we've made them. But I'd like to see more of a partnership with the state and the federal government, particularly in these times.
I used to live in New York, which I think is a great city. I now live in L.A., which I think is a great city as well. But it's kind of hard sometimes to convince people of that. Why do you think L.A. has this weird, bad rap in some parts of the country?
Well, first of all, I said great things about New York.
You did.
But I love the New Yorkers who always talk about New York but live in Los Angeles. I actually find it rather funny. I think what happens is that a lot of people grew up somewhere else. I mean, we're, I think, 42% foreign-born. Many of the people that live in Los Angeles weren't born here, so they still feel some connection to wherever they were raised. But there's a reason why they live here.
Yeah,
there's a quality of life here. There, you can start new, brand new, remake yourself, and people just embrace you. And I think that's why people love Los Angeles the way they do.
What's your favorite place to go for fun in Los Angeles?
Hiking in the Santa Monica Mountains. I just love it. I spend a lot of time there in Griffith Park. It's a great place to be.
Antonio Villaraigosa is the mayor of Los Angeles and the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Mayor Villaraigosa, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And finally to London, where comedian Tim Vine has won a prize for Joke of the Year with this line, David. Conjunctivitis.com. That's a sight for sore eyes.
No, cue the
nothing.
Tumbleweeds okay. And the crickets, right?
All right. Well, he also won for a joke contest 2 years ago with this zinger. This guy is really, really top-notch hilarity. I've just been on a once-in-a-lifetime holiday. I'll tell you what, never again.
Oh, Can't they do better than that? We can do better than that.
Submit your jokes, by the way. We are on Twitter at Marketplace Radio, and you can go there and tell us all of your favorite one-liners any time of day. Make us laugh. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm David Brancaccio in New York, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.